Welcome to the War Report on public education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on public education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the War Report. And for those of you, this is your first time, we welcome you as well. Once again, we're going to have that split format, and that we're going to have one show that'll go from now until about 35 minutes or so, 40. And then we're going to have another report coming in from Dr. Turner on his walk to D.C. from Connecticut. So we have a lot to cover, and we're going to get right to it. Our guest today is the returning Dr. Vicki Young. I slowed that down because I don't want to rush that. But anyway, Vicki, welcome back, and let's get right to it.
All right.
I want to start by saying, let's go back to 1965 when Johnson did his thing called the War on Poverty, and how the Department of Education was once again asked, or education itself, public education itself, were once again asked to help solve a major social problem. Going back to the days of the early 1900s and a little before that, whenever there was a major social problem, the schools, public education, was turned to solve the problem. They were the guys in the white hat. Then come along Sputnik, and all of a sudden, education is blamed for allowing the Russians to beat us into man's flight into space. And it's been sort of what, downhill since then. So we have this thing called the Department of Education. We have this program that they call the Elementary Secondary Education Act. Its first appearance was basically an anti-poverty program. Am I right?
And right.
What's your assessment?
It was one piece of Johnson's anti-poverty campaign, and he understood that it was an interrelated issue. So there were other laws, you know, that had to do with housing and equal, you know, equal access to those types of things. But the Elementary and Secondary Education Act was one of the anti-poverty laws. And its aim, and I hope I can call it ESEA because it is kind of a long name, its aim was to strengthen and improve the elementary and secondary schools. Now that was, you know, that's your K-12 schools. So that was the major aim, was that we would end up with a stronger, improved K-12 system. To do that, they focused, and he used John F. Kennedy's twin goals for education, and those are out of a message to Congress that can be found. But his twin goals were educational quality and educational improvement. So they set out to improve both quality and opportunity. And so those are the twin goals. To do that, to accomplish it and connect it to the anti-poverty issue, the funding for Title I was to stay focused on the educationally deprived children of poverty. And so that's the really the centerpiece of Title I, is to stay focused on the educational needs of those children of poverty. But out from that was the bigger issue of actually strengthening and improving the system. And that's where it, I think the concept is getting lost.
Let me come in.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to what she just said. It was a recognition that poverty has a great impact on educational quality, opportunity, and outcome. Now, that was a big deal then, but we knew that and have known that for ever and a day. But listen to what we're saying now. It was taken into consideration that poverty has an impact, has a big impact. This is something outside of the classroom, outside of the school, that's in the community, in the home, in society.
Mm-hmm.
Major. Simple, but major. I'm sorry, but I had to get that loud and clear.
No, I think that that's exactly what we need to do, is be loud and clear. Because, you know, the law, even though it focused on Title I funding to those low-income children or children from low-income families, it's the writers of the law still understood that community was important, and that where we were seeing the biggest problems were cities and rural areas, where there was a concentration of poverty, because then the community resources that can offer educational opportunities if they exist, those community resources are missing or not coordinated or not developed. So that was, you know, that goes into the other titles of the law. The title, well, they looked at the funding. That was Title I. They looked at learning resources, and that was a focus on libraries, textbooks, all of the materials they needed. That was Title II. And then they looked at the services lacking, and that was Title III. And that was things that you will hear, if you read JFK's stuff, you will hear him specifically talk about vision, dental, and nutrition. And those are the types of services they knew children of poverty needed in order to be ready to learn. And then so that was Title III. Title IV was dissemination of information, and that was the responsibility of the U.S. Department of Education. Well, they didn't have a Department of Education then, but that is one of the main functions of the U.S. Department of Education. It was the Office of Education back then.
Right, in HUD, Housing Urban Department of Housing Urban Development back then.
Right. Yep, and so dissemination of information was important, because how are you expecting communities with concentration of poverty, how are you expecting to break, and this is their words, the poverty, ignorance, ignorance, poverty cycle? That's how they spoke back then, very clearly saying, we can't break this cycle unless we educate. And they set out to educate parents, counselors, teachers, leaders, community members. And so, you know, we have this information, and that was Title IV at the time. And then in addition, they recognized the inequality between states, and that that is a national issue. And so they, on Title V, was specifically to improve, for the federal government to help improve state departments of education, so that those state departments of education could better identify and address their own needs, their own state's needs. This was supposed to be, you know, it's a cooperative effort. So those were the five titles, you know, that were set out to improve quality of education. And in improving quality of education, we're going to be improving educational opportunity, focusing always on the needs of the low-income children.
So again, let me come in. Notice the word achievement has never been mentioned in the 10 minutes we've been talking. There was no emphasis on
You're exactly right.
no such thing as achievement gap. It was opportunity gap. It was quality gap.
Mm-hmm.
And less of a political gap.
you're nice in calling that a gap. If you don't mind,
we are on air, and I do try not to. You know what I'm saying. I try to be a little bit more diplomatic. Okay. Take us now into No Child Left Behind, and we'll do the comparison and then go in from there into where we are now.
Okay. What I would like to do, though, if I can, is take just one moment to give people the words of the architect of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act and his explanation in his own book, his own words. He said, it is demanding excellent education for all. Quality education has come to imply integration. For a white child taught in isolation is a deprived child. It implies an end to the double standard in education, a standard that gives quality, high-quality schooling to students in exclusive suburbs and inferior schooling to children in slums. That gives preference to some states over others. And I just wanted to bring that up because I think the terminology excellent education has been co-opted as we moved forward. I still believe we should be able to use that terminology. It was what they were after, but they were after in a much different way than what we see with No Child Left Behind. So we went from strengthening and improving K-12 schools through opportunity and quality to closing the achievement gap through accountability, flexibility, and choice. Those are the words of the aim of No Child Left Behind.
Say that again for everyone.
Okay.
Now we're at No Child Left Behind.
Now we're at No Child Left Behind.
So we 2000, and Bush comes into office, and by 2002, he signs this thing called No Child Left Behind, which is a reauthorization of the original Elementary Secondary Education Act. Now we're going to see a major shift. And this shift, I call this shift the Trojan horse. This is the shift that I have been saying for a year and a half that tucked inside of this bipartisan bill. And if you see the photos with Bush signing it and Kennedy standing by smiling and some of the black caucus, the congressional caucus members all smiling, everyone is ushering in this new phase with this huge smile on their face. And I'm saying to myself, does anyone recognize that, to me, this is a formal declaration of war? And I'll go back for a minute to when we had Dr. Duncan on, when we talked about how the conservative movement going against Roosevelt's New Deal from back in the 30s was against the New Deal, and the Department of Education was considered enemy from the get-go because it was an expansion of government, and it too was to be attacked and destroyed. And so here you have this war that's been going on since the late 1920s through the 30s or 40s. You get the New Deal, you get Johnson coming in, expanding on the New Deal, and then you get Bush coming in, and the war that has been simmering, covert, and et cetera, to me, takes on, in your face, here we are, an act of war.
Right, and I saw it as a huge overstep by the federal government because of that close the achievement gap. They took a law that was meant to support equal opportunity and support, you know, the low income states and children, and they turned it into a full blown national accountability mechanism. That's a big step, and to me it was a big overstep because we missed something in there because we never had the discussion about does this country want national standards and testing and a national accountability system. To me, that it's inconceivable. And I think part of the reason that we missed that step was back in 1991, when both the Sandia researchers and the researchers looking at indicator systems were basically shut down. And that was under the time of Senator Alexander's reign as Secretary of Education. There was a warning went out from the group that studied indicator systems, the ones that we should be using to monitor education as a nation. And they warned that an indicator system built solely around achievement tests will mislead the American people. And that is exactly what they went and did, especially when they put it right in the aim of the law, you know, close the achievement gap. That is a test-based achievement focus. And, you know, so it's like, wow, that was pretty big. And I think, you know, the country missed it, because...
Well, the country did and they didn't. Let me clarify.
Mm-hmm.
In the 90s, there was two movements. One, the Standards Movement, and one was the... all of a sudden, I'm blanking on the second movement.
Choice?
But hopefully it'll come to me. But both of these movements were an attempt to bring in privatization. They didn't call it privatization. It was a voucher system. It was choice coming mm-hmm. out of the Chicago boys, Milton Friedman. And mm-hmm. they wanted to, as you know, move the responsibility for providing education from the government to private sector by giving families choice and various instruments for them to implement the choice. The movement failed to gain any traction. They went back to work, and they came out with choice. The first movement was the choice movement, and the second movement was the standards movement. Both movements failed because they talked about human capital, and public didn't get this notion of human capital. Then they came back. They studied the civil rights movement. This is the point I wanted to make. And they co-opted the language from the civil rights movement, and they came back with an entirely different propaganda campaign. And they got some traction. And from that 2.0 stance to where we are now, they have steadily gained traction to the point now where they truly threaten the decimation of public education. And by the way, that was the goal of one of those two movements, the choice and the standards movement, was to destroy public education and start from ground up, mm-hmm. stated in their objectives.
So they did, you know, so by putting those words, you know, accountability, flexibility, and choice into federal law as part of the mechanism, because remember, okay, so it was strengthen and improve, now it became close the achievement gap. It was aiming for educational quality for all and opportunity for all, and that became accountability, flexibility, and choice. So it totally changed the aim and the focuses of the law. And in doing that, then, everything about the law changed. So at this point in time, you know, you mentioned the language. I mean, those words, accountability, flexibility, and choice, were all easy things to sell to the public. They were very well written. And it just really, you know, hits at our heart. I mean, and if they've made the country out, you know, because of the suppression of the real information about our where our standing is in the world and the use of these scores and really the way we should not be so excited about international comparisons, you know, when we're looking at such a broad population here in the United States, with the large amount of immigration that we have, the various language, there's a lot of things that went into why we score where we do on international scores. And that information was not given to the American people. So decisions were made, you know, without fully understanding the statistics and then focusing everybody in on that. So we were really misled. We were deceived as a nation. And we have steadily improved. We improved dramatically the two decades that followed the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. And they know that statistically now. I've got some charts on my website that I think demonstrate it very well. And I give a lot of credit to anyone in education right now for holding this country steady for the last two decades, because that's been quite a trick. So anyway, back on the subject of No Child Left Behind, so with the wording still remaining, because neither version, neither the Every Child Achieves Act, the Senate version, or the Student Success Act, the House version, neither of those take us back to the aim of strengthening and improving schools through quality and opportunity. They do not do that. They remain with accountability, flexibility, and choice. And I can hardly even read Title I of the Senate version. But my biggest concern probably right now with what's happening in Congress, and you had mentioned it on the Facebook page, the potential these laws have to really squelch the resistance we're seeing, the resistance movement that is really centered around the opt-out movement right now. Because opt-out movement is supported by the anti-Common Core people, the anti-high-stakes testing people, and the anti-data mining people, you know, in addition to some other groups. So what people need to know is that these two versions that are sitting there in Congress still have to go through the rest of the process. And that is for them to, you know, if it passes the House, passes the Senate, they still have to combine these laws. And so just to give an example of what I can kind of see coming here is the House has put out their marketing, and it's on the Education and Workforce Committee website, and it's under Key Facts. It's about the fourth or fifth document down that they have listed there. And it really hits what people, you know, are against. Like it's targeted for the anti-government movement, anti-Obama people, anti-NCLB accountability group, the pro-small government, pro-local control, and pro-charter people. So if you take all of those people out of the opt-out movement, you have a problem. We have weakened the resistance, and I'm telling you, they're doing it by making false promises. Because if you look at, and I'm just going to throw this out there for all those people that really get into the details of these laws, on the House version, and that's H.R. 5, page 8, section 7, A2, it talks about not supporting, financially supporting national tests, but you go to the Senate version, and what they're going to support are state-developed tests, including testing consortiums.
I was about to say, it's a back door. They say that Duncan can't force states any longer to become part of the Common Core per se, but states are allowed to partner with, what are the exact words they say here? Because I have the bill up in front of me as well. They talk about states can voluntarily form or join with other states in a partnership to develop and implement assessment.
Yep, and that's, you know, and that's the real danger here is if, you know, so they're promising, you know, that we're not going to see Common Core. We're going to make Common Core go away. So I'm just warning people. I looked through a lot of the House information, and it really, truly is a lot of, I put great big P's next to things that were just truly in line with the different propaganda mechanisms that are used. I've written a thing on propaganda pitfalls, and it really is helpful to understand what's being used on us. And so, you know, I would just ask people to really, really try to learn a little bit more about the original Elementary and Secondary Education Act and ask yourselves, think for yourselves, because, you know, what we're being told and what can potentially come out of this are two different things. And the original law was only 35 pages long, and it covered things, you know, quite nicely. So anyway, I would encourage people to really dig into that further and understand that right now we need to be demanding something better of Congress.
In order to do that, Vicki, let me take it back a step. This week, I had a number of people get in touch with me and address something along the following. Thank you for having a show that talks about this, because I didn't know what ESEAA was.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for doing this, because I was not aware. And then thank you for calling out the unions and asking them their position. You and I know what their positions are, but even teachers don't know what their own union positions are. And so I already knew this, but it sort of reinforced for me the fact that teachers, they say there are 5 million teachers in the two various national unions. They don't know.
No.
They are unaware, thus right. No understanding. And so hence, both of these versions of the bill are moving through the various committees and chambers. And if they think No Child Left Behind has done a number on them, if the current versions are melted into one, it can make No Child Left Behind look like a day in a park, and they will never know what hit them. So for me, it becomes a question of, you should know, not to the level of detail that you know, and that I know, but you should know about this, either individually on your own or through your union. And if you're not getting it from your union and you're not getting it on your own, then there will be nothing challenging Congress from coming out with their version of the new version of the original bill, which is be an extension of and a slight modification of No Child Left Behind. And we all know what that has done to public education, to teaching and communities and et cetera. And it's another 5-year stint, and we will let it happen again. So that concerned me more than anything. And hopefully, if we can get the union to respond, which I know they're not. I'm not holding my breath. But I do know that you asked both unions to respond this week. How did that go?
I did. Yes, and the reason, you know, because I still kind of work from the stance that I don't expect people to have dug back into the 60s and feel like they personally know the background to this law. That's asking a lot. But what I am asking is that since I have done that work, I gladly share anything and everything I've got, you know, including Francis Keppel, the architect, including his book, you know. So, you know, I still want to give them a chance, but at this point in time, I really don't feel it's wise for people to trust the words they're reading. Just like I can say excellent education for all, and I mean something totally different than what Jeb Bush's organization, you know, Excellence in Education, means. So it's really hard. I don't blame people for being kind of lost in this fight, but what they can do is ask for clarification. I welcome questions in any way you can get to me, which should be easy. You know, Facebook, Twitter, email is on my website. I will gladly answer any questions, because I think clarity on this issue is what's really, really been missing. And it's been missing for a reason. They've made it pretty murky. So,
I have gone to hopefully some considerable length to make sure that some of the groups that you just mentioned, but the opt-out groups that have been the most active and have done the most in terms of providing a real resistance, a threat to the reformers, to make sure that they know that they're being targeted. When I had some of those groups on about maybe a month ago, and I said, be ready for the pushback. You know it's coming. And they said, yes, we know, and da-da-da-da. Well, 10 days ago, a parent, an activist, lawyer, very into what's happening and a part of what's happening in New York, co-authored a piece that was on internet where she specifically said that with the current bills that are being pushed through target the opt-out movement. What I had said weeks before, it's coming.
Right.
And here's how it does it. It basically says that every state must ensure, if you can use that word, that 95% of all eligible students must take the exam. Well, we already know that 95% is basically a statistical number for validity purposes. If under 95%, you can't really use the results and say that they're valid. So there is a push within the new bill, and when it comes out, to increase basically the pressure on admins, teachers, principals, and parents to get their students to take the test. This is a direct attack or war on opt-out.
It is.
And the attorney is Lisa Hudson, who is the mom, activist, and et cetera, and piece that she, I think it's June 6th or 7th. It's right there on the internet. So
right. But my point would be with these laws, and not only are they saying the 95%, but the Senate version goes on to elaborate on how it's 95% of each of the tested groups. So it's even more stringent than what we saw with No Child Left Behind. But my whole point has been the federal law was not meant to be an accountability law. The original Elementary and Secondary Education Act asked for testing that was to be used for program improvement. That is totally different from achievement tests as a nation. Okay, so see, this is where we run into real problems with the law. I mean, it's just so far off base. So right now, these laws should not be targeting accountability at all. I'm asking the civil rights groups, if you think we need a national accountability law, which that's really kind of a joke to have a national accountability law, because I think what they really want is accountability at the local level. That's different. So if they want a national accountability law, I think it should be a separate law. We have got to go back. If we are really sincere about addressing the needs of the low-income children in this country, if we really believe in educational opportunity for all kids, we have to go back to the aims and the title of the original Elementary and Secondary Education Act. You want to talk choice and accountability? Do it in a separate law, and let's have that discussion separately, because that is not why we have federal education law. We have federal education K-12 law because we were going to address the inequality in this country, the unequal access to quality education.
So there's so much more.
That's my plea.
There's so much more that we can talk about. We got about 5 minutes before Dr. Turner will come on. Let me say this. From what I've looked at, the one thing that it does, the new bill when it comes out, if it comes out in the form that it's been worked on so far, it limits the Secretary of Education power. It sort of does a number on Duncan.
Well, not really, though.
Not really?
No, because what they put in the Senate bill is this educational plan, and all the educational plans for the state have to be approved by the Secretary of Education. So they can say it in one section, but they put the opposite in another.
But they seem to, okay, now, you're the expert. I will definitely defer to you. But my reading of it, they did seem to specifically call him out in various sections of the Senate bill, limiting his powers. But we both have to look at that. But let me move on. Okay. Assessment continues. In other words, assessment of large portion of the state's budget will be eaten up by assessment as opposed to going into the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about states can volunteer and go into association and not have to deal with a Common Core thing, but there's so much more. We only have a few minutes left. What I want you to do, Vicki, looking at the two bills like you have, and what do you see? What do you see being passed? And do a short one. And then also give your website again, so that people can go to your website?
Oh, the website is thecrucialvoice.com. And I will tell people the Crucial Voice is yours. Please speak up. but make it an informed voice. And I know, like I said, that is difficult to do. You're asking an optimist what I see coming out of this. And what
then I'll stop you right there because I don't want to hear from optimists.
Yeah, so right now the way they sit, it's not good enough. And that's the thing I think, people, we have got to stop accepting that you're going to tweak No Child Left Behind or fix No Child Left Behind. It's not fixable. It's wrong. So back to the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and then let's talk about the others when we're done with that.
Okay. Before we bring Dr. Turner on, I want to say I'm planning for next week to invite some of the parent group so that we can ask the questions of the parents group in terms of their position on the two bills, which one they prefer, what are they doing to get their voices in, and particularly the group from New York, and et cetera. That's my hope and that's my plan. And Vicki, if you're available, I'm drafting you again to help with the discussion if we can get this going. And then after that, I plan to go into charter schools. I'm going to spend maybe 2 to 4 shows on charter schools from A to Z.
Oh, boy.
And then there's other stuff that is coming up this summer. And so...
You bet. I'm here for you, James.
Also, turning to Dr. Turner, this week, this week we put up a huge banner on BBS Radio. A banner is a big, parade picture of him and his cause and what he's doing. And I want to tell him before he comes on, we had thousands of people seeing his banner, clicking on it, reading on it, becoming aware of him and his thing. It was phenomenal in terms of the amount of attention we got. And so with that, I'm going to welcome Dr. Turner in. Hi, Jesse. Well, you're supposed to be there. Well, I don't know if he's still there. He was there a few minutes ago. So, back to us, Vicki. Okay, we're still trying to get Dr. Turner. He was there, and he was waiting to come on.
Well, you don't have him. let me just say that what Jesse's doing, is bringing attention to the topic, And I really hope that we get some media coverage on that, because, you know, this isn't the first time that the Jessies made this effort to walk in the name of resistance to the current reform measures. You know, I worked with Jesse on the Save Our Schools, organizing the march in Washington. And, I mean, this is something that we have been slowly making headway on our original guiding principles for the Save Our Schools group. And, you know, we were looking to make an end to high-stakes testing used for purposes of student, teacher, and school evaluation, curriculum developed for and by local school communities, teacher, family, and community leadership informing public education policies, and equitable funding for all, you know, public school communities. Those were the four guiding principles we functioned by and attracted attention about. And those are still the same things that, you know, Jesse's walking for today.
Vicki, Jesse's with us now.
Oh, great. Okay. Welcome, Jesse.
Jesse, you there? Well, I'm getting all type of reports saying that Jesse's online now, but every time I try and invite him in, something happens.
He gets cut off.
I don't know what to do here other than say, okay, let's talk about Jesse and his walk for him.
Yeah,
I think you're a good person since you have known him for a long time and you were involved in that first walk and et cetera. And your point that you just made is an excellent one. When I talked to Jesse months and months ago, one of the things he told me is that first walk got very little coverage.
Yep.
Almost none. And one of the things I was going to ask him about today was to compare that first walk to today's walk, because I understand there are like three other radio shows that are providing coverage for him. I don't know about any national outlets yet or local newspaper that he comes into a given locale, but he is getting and then the various activities that are being planned for him in like New York and Pennsylvania. It's a marching band coming into town after a war or something. It's incredible what people are doing up and down this entire route of his. And, you know, it makes me envious and jealous. I want to get out and walk and see if, you know, people come out and give me the party and what have you. So
you still don't have him?
Hello. Oh, for a third time. Jesse, are you with us?
Yeah, I am, James.
Hi, Jesse.
How are you doing, James? How's everything?
Okay, we were just talking about you. And I want you to know it wasn't good, and I'm glad you weren't.
Oh, I've been listening to Victoria. I was able to hear her on the computer, so I've listened to the whole piece. Wonderful person, right on target with stuff. And I love that piece where she talked about that NTLB. If you want accountability, and she looked at the Elementary and Secondary Act. And what that said is you're supposed to, the accountability is not for children, not for schools, but for your programs, the experimental programs you're doing. And I was on your show before. The feds have absolutely no data that indicates any of the experimental programs that they have implemented under NCLB have met with success. Actually, most of them have met with failure. So it's kind of interesting. They want us to look at what kids are doing, what schools are doing, but the data, if we really stick closely to the Elementary and Secondary Act, it points to the most massive education reform failure in the history of America. Victoria is right on target with they're not doing what the law is supposed to do.
And hopefully people will come to understand that particular point, and hopefully get more involved in trying to let their congressmen and women and senators know what we want, what we need, versus what's being shoved onto us. Jesse, how are you doing in terms of the walking? How are you holding up?
All right, we're 140 miles down, 260 miles to go. I'm in Yonkers. I was at the Clearwater Music Festival. That's that Pete Seeger Festival. I was there with Michael Shore and Rosalie Friend and all the SOSs that live in this area. So they were at the music festival. It was a great day with children, with parents. It was just a wonderful day, and it was the weather turned out. It started out rainy, and then it cleared up. It was a beautiful day, and I don't know what the feds are seeing, but James, everywhere I go, people are coming out, and they are saying enough is enough. This is failing. This is wrong. This is hurting our children. This is hurting our schools. This is hurting our teachers, and we don't want it anymore. That's what I'm hearing. So I'm hearing that in Clearwater. Yesterday I was in Danbury with Joe Leave and Dr. Darla Shaw and a whole group of very experienced teachers. Same stuff. We don't want this anymore. This is failing. I was in Stanford the day before. Same stuff. Parents coming out. Young people coming out. And before that, I was in Meriden. I've been in Britain. I've been in Hartford. Willimantics. I've been all across Connecticut. I've even Skyped in to Dr. Sherry Hughes from North Carolina University, Chapel Hill, to his doctoral students. And his doctoral students are in the Ed Leadership Program. All of them were teachers. And the message was the same. This is failing. This is failing. It's destroying the desire to learn. It's hurting our children. It's hurting our schools. So that's what I'm hearing, James. And my feeling is I'm with Mark Mason on this. It's going to take a massive, in the streets, in their face, because there's so much money being passed around in campaign contributions that our politicians know it's failing. They know it's wrong, but they won't do what's right as long as the money is there. So we need to be in their face. So I love hearing Victoria. I love her book. I love her work. I love her blog. She has it right. But we really need a revolution of people standing up. Action. It's action time.
I take it that you are more encouraged now, 140 miles in, versus the 400 miles that you did in 2010.
It's a completely different walk. I was talking to Dr. Shaw yesterday, Dollar Shaw at WestCon, and that was the part of the conversation. I said, in 2010, I had to explain things to people. I'm sure Dr. Young, who was just on, we know each other from 2010. We're old friends. We were explaining, and forever explaining. And people would say, but, you know, the tests will help the kids. But maybe the charters will be good. But, and we explain. Let me tell you something, James, that there's no need to explain. As soon as I step into the room and I say, this is the most massive failure of education reform policies ever, the people are saying, amen, Jesse, right on. They're hurting our children. They're destroying our schools. They're crushing our teachers. I mean, it is a completely different. I don't have to convince anybody. What happens is people say, all right, now what do we do? And so, and that to me, and I follow those four steps that Dr. King told us to follow in a nonviolent civil disobedience campaign of, I've gathered the facts, I've negotiated, my walk is my purification, and right now we are ready as a nation to act, and that's what this walk is about. I'm telling people, we can act, and we are.
So I think, Jesse, that when you get to D.C., you're going to continue on to California.
You never know. Maybe there's a sabbatical in me, and I wouldn't mind walking in every place across the country. The good thing about social media is that I've been able to communicate with young Texas teachers. I've been able to communicate with people, parents in Chicago, educators in the state of Washington, in Oregon, in California, in Alabama. It's a new world now. So even though I'm walking through five states,
I'm not just I'm walking in those states, but I'm communicating with people in all 50 states. Even Hawaii has contacted me. You know, I'll tell you, I haven't got anyone from Alaska, so maybe it's 49 states. My mailbox at the university crashed twice. It crashed twice in just, I'm in my 11th day. It crashed twice because so many people are responding and contacting me and sharing their story. I can't wait until I get to D.C.
Jesse, I know what you're saying is truth to power. Here at the War Report, both on the radio show as well as a Facebook group, I got people from all over the U.S., including Hawaii, no one from Alaska yet, just like you, but also across Europe, across the Middle East, across Latin America, across Africa. They all want more information. They all want to be involved in what is going on because privatization is a global war that I talk about all the time as a global war. So I'm not surprised that you're getting the reception that you're getting. In fact, I'm super encouraged by it, and that's why I want you to now walk on to California.
Just maybe, you never know.
No. We'll do a relay, you know, like the Pony Express used to do. You walk to point A, and somebody else will pick it up and take it to point from B to C and et cetera. But no, the point is that I'm so pleased, I'm sure everyone else is, that the reception this time is so much different and better. But let me go to another point. Your GoFundMe page, from last week this time to today, I just checked it a few moments ago, you doubled the contributions that the Ed community has put in. So I'm plugging it again, saying, folks, there's still a little ways to go. Come on, make the contribution supporting Jesse because he has expenses and he's doing this walk for all of us. So we should all pitch in something to get him over. Matter of fact, I'd like to see more coming in than he's asked for. And he's only asked for $3,500. So I want to get that in before our time runs out. I got about a minute left. So Jesse, give me your 30-second vote. Pitch, and Vicky, yours.
My pitch is we're finally winning. The tide has turned. We're at the tipping point. My Ed reformers are running and dodging. Now, they're still grabbing the money, but they know that their time is coming to an end, and either we beat them at the polls or the FBI will throw them all in jail. That's the way I see it. Victory is coming.
And my final pitch would be to stay united, no matter what they try to take us off course. Stay united, follow your instincts.
And mine will be continue to support Jesse. Come out, folks, to places where he is passing by, and to contribute to his GoFundMe campaign. Because he's only halfway to where he wants to be, and he's already done a third of his trip. So with that, I'm going to have to say goodbye. And Jesse, you'll be back next week with another update. And Vicky, I'm working now on trying to get the parents organized to come on for next week. And if I do, hopefully you'll come back and help me out. And with that, I have to say happy Father's Day to all the guys out there. I'm not neglecting you, but that's how it turned out today. And to everyone else, have a nice Sunday and see you or hear you next Sunday.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.